Blog Talk Radio.
No.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you get the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
And despite the weather, despite all your obstacles, we join you here in the sky, 9 p.m. tonight. Special bad time. Oh, that hurt. Okay, this is Dr. Mark here in this naked summer or not. 9 p.m. Nine tonight, like Bob Seger would say. And giggling up there in Patterson at me is Professor Val.
Hello.
And joining us high top the Timberland is Dr. Jeb up there.
Greetings.
Up there. Well, we had to
God.
Think and act nimble tonight. If you ambled onto the server at 8 o'clock, of course you met the same obstacle we had called server down. And here in the free world of Blog Talk Radio, we all panic and run to live help. And the lovely Philo Christine, I believe, right? That was our help
Christy,
tonight.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Christy, okay. She patched us through to get us on here at 9 o'clock. And we had to scramble and get our guest, Drew Rozelle, recorded at the usual time of that he expected to call us, which was 8:20. So we're going to play that interview at 9:20 if it's ready to go up there. How's it doing up there on the hopper?
Trying.
All right. Well, if it worst comes to worst, I will play it down here on the speakers.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have it recorded. It was about a 22-23 minute interview, I think, all told, and we'll get to that. But we got lots of stuff to talk about here. We've got monkey clones. We've got Saturn making noises. So I guess is A-Rod officially a Yankee again? Did he sign?
Drew went on to some blog or some website that he looks at and said it's unofficially a 10-year, $275 million deal that he's
Oh,
back.
Man.
Yeah, he got rooked. My only interest in that is that, of course, we have an Otto-Philo pairing there between him and his agent there, Scott Boras.
That's very interesting, isn't it?
And the Yankees want to hit the Otto out. So
yeah.
Does that mean he loses his commission because A-Rod brokered a deal without him? How does that work? No agent in the room?
I
mean, he's got to have a...
I was wondering about that. Like, what does his contract say with Boras? I'm sure Boras isn't letting... I'm sure there's something written in there Boras isn't letting...
there's no way Boras is walking away from 10% of that. No. I just think it's funny that that it's happening that way, that the Yankees negotiated out around the agent. It's kind of funny.
Huh. Well, you know what? I was listening... When I heard that, I was like, so the Philo has had enough because he couldn't stand everybody talking bad about him. He finally said, wait a minute, you know? And it was like... It was like, that's not really me. That was, you know, that was my mean big brother here who told me to do this and you know, be nasty and opt out in the middle of the World Series. And it's like, I don't know, what was your read? I'm curious to hear your read on that sort of, on what happened there. Because as a Philo, I could see it, like, he couldn't stand the press anymore. He couldn't stand everybody thinking he was a prick, you know.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it was, that big final fear of being exiled and being excommunicated and being judged from the outside, and all those things kicked in, and he went crying home.
Yeah, which is really kind of, it seemed like that is really, really where he wanted to be, but he you know, Boras had his arm twisted and said, no, you're going to opt out, we're going to get 350 and all that, and he really didn't want to go someplace else and have to try to reestablish himself, you know?
Yeah, well, the thing was is that, you know, the way it went down, if people don't remember, is that, you know, Boras got made the announcement, you know, in the eighth inning of the Game 4 of the World Series and sort of like, you know, was bigger than the event of the Red Sox winning, was A-Rod opting out. He made a really big display, sort of like when a kid threatens to run away from home. You know, it's like, you know, I'm leaving, I got my suitcase, I'm going out, and, you know. And it was a big kind of like, almost like a purposeful kind of orchestrated event. He calls the guy in the dugout, the whole thing. And it was just kind of unusual that, in the span of a couple of weeks, now all of a sudden it was like, well, maybe there isn't $350 million out there. And then there was a whole notion of, is there collusion? And it was just a lot of weird vibes coming from the owners who just didn't want to pay this guy this much money and kind of give in to him and let him run the league, basically. Because if they pay A-Rod bad, you know, what's going to happen a couple of years and paying Jeter and all the other guys? It just seems like baseball's gotten back to where it was at the beginning of the decade with these outrageous contracts. It kind of dipped in the middle, and now it's going back the other way. But the innovation, I guess, is to have no agent in the room. Just like, we will negotiate with you, but not that stupid agent of yours. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So I don't know what's going on here. Were we on the air or not? I'm just questioning that right now because if you go to our site and click on the Blog Talk button, do we actually have any Audible? I might have to go do that now as I'm talking because we'll see what's happening. Because it is very strange.
Each week I am further awed by the technological wizardry that is our modern talk radio show here on Blog Talk.
Yeah, well, you know, we are doing a lot of work, so I don't know what's going on, but let's see if we this is going to be kind of weird if it plays on the air while we're talking. I'll just see if it's working or not because according to them, where we should be broadcasting, but we'll see if it's actually coming out the other end here, because we could be just talking to ourselves about A-Rod here for the last 5 minutes.
Very exciting, too.
Which not going to go in the Broadcast Hall of Fame, but let's see if it plays. It says 53 minutes and all that. Let's see.
All right. Well, while you're doing that, I'm going to
click this
here.
This is us playing to ourselves. Let's see.
And I'm going to click on Drew's interview and see if that's uploaded, too, and then I'll shut it off.
Okay.
Let's see.
Well, this is wild. So it opens up, it says Blog Talk Radio, and then nothing happens.
Okay, Drew's interview is also not playing, so you'll have to do it manually. Shall I go on to live help?
You might as well. We're on the air, and we're not being recorded, and we're not being seen. Maybe this is going to be the archive, the hidden show. But we had to record this show on the down low. Yeah, go on live help and see what's happening. We'll amuse ourselves with the clone Sape that we have.
Yes. Actually.
Well, I'm looking for that story because that I don't know if you saw that a couple of days ago, but they have cloned an ape or some type of monkey, and this is the beginning of the end because if they can do that, of course,
we're next.
You know, they'll clone OJ. That'll be the next thing.
That'll be interesting. Mm-hmm.
So did anyone catch that thing about Saturn with the sounds coming from Saturn? Oh, that was kind of cool too. Now the planets are hissing at us. It's you know.
I don't blame them.
No,
we're a disaster on this planet.
If I was a planet, I'd hiss at us too.
Yep.
Researchers clone monkey by splitting embryo. This is so cool. Look at this thing. Oh my God. In Oregon, of all places, they cloned this thing, and let's see, they produced one living monkey, a bright-eyed rhesus macaw. Named Tetra. This is essentially the method of Brave New World, he says. Oh, this is scary. This opens the prospect of mass identical replication. Tetra is different than Dolly the Sheep. I remember Dolly the Sheep. Because they use the process called nuclear transfer. So now they're taking the nucleus of an adult cell and reprogramming the unfertilized cell.
Wow.
Yeah. So Tetra was born 157 days after the original embryo was reproduced, and then they split it into four, so hence the name Tetra. And let's see, so this is, so there's more babies due in May.
Ugh.
Possible we'll have genetically identical monkeys born with different mothers.
Huh.
Now they got a whole monkey thing down here. Here's the monkey genes. So, testing nature against nurture. Cloned monkeys also facilitate the argument whether nature versus nurture is a bigger role in development of an offspring. This gets into a little domain stuff. I wonder if you can be onto if you're a clone of a phylo. It's weird.
Hmm.
Yeah, we haven't gotten there yet. There are theories that maternal environments can result in an IQ drop of 10 points. Oh, no, that's speaking from my development. Let's see. Children and even grandchildren of malnourished women have been prone to heart disease and diabetes. By taking a set of triplets and putting them in three different mothers, you could have one mom listen to Mozart, another heavy metal, and maybe another one NPR, and have the same baby born with the same mom in a sequential pregnancy and have three different babies. So there you go. Monkeys cloned in Oregon.
I don't make monkeys. I just train them.
Well, it's good to see that the dashboard's working. Holy crap. phone number here, is, if you can hear us, is 646-478-4847. How's the live help coming along?
What's her face?
Christy?
Yeah, that one. She says that they're working on it.
Wait a minute. Are we on the air or not?
We don't know.
She doesn't know?
They're working on it. I don't know.
What is this working on? It's like a commercial. We're working on it. We're working on it. Oh, my God. This is nuts.
I don't know.
Well, I'm just going to continue to wheel our way towards the interview segment when I have to hold the phone next to the thing because it won't upload. What happened with the upload? It just failed?
No, it uploads blank. I think we have to convert it into an MP3 to get it up there.
But it says it does
I know.
Let me ask her about that while you're waiting for the thing to see if we're on the air. This is the show within the show tonight. So anyway, the theme of tonight is your relationship with success, and of course, everything's failing. So we're getting the full Philo treatment. And that, we touched on it a little before with A-Rod, is that this fear of failure in Philos, if you could say that three times fast with crackers in your mouth, fear of failure in Philos, is a lot of the driving force for people to run to the bookstore, run to the seminars, to state chase themselves into delirium that I will succeed, I think I can. And this leads into the era of coaching, which has become sort of its own viral community in the last maybe 5 or 10 years. And we have Drew Rozelle on, who talks about his evolution coaching model and some of the other things that have been going on in the coaching community, some of the things he's been up to try to get past this point where everything that you do is something that's a result-oriented or kind of a down-the-line kind of thing, and getting you into being a little more centered and a little more grounded in the way you go about, developing and progressing and evolving in your life. Because there's a difference, I think, that gets lost in the translation sometimes with the old language, and coaching's brought in some language that's very distinct from psychology and some of the other things. So I don't know. What's going on now? Where are we?
I don't know.
You don't know? Well, how would I know if you don't know?
Well, I'm waiting. She's asking me questions. I'm answering them. You know, I belong to the International Society for Mental Health Online, and there's always discussions on there about licensing and certification and who's licensed to do what and can you do therapy online and so on. And the whole thing with life coaching comes up a lot because the different states have different rules and regulations as to who can say that they're a therapist or a psychologist or whatever, but there's no regulation in saying that you're a life coach. So what a lot of people do is say that they're a life coach, and then they don't have to go through the hoops that others have to go through with licensing and certification.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole ethical thing that's been talked about on this mailing list for months now.
Yeah, and then that used to be the whole deal with everyone went out 10 years ago and got their license to be a minister, to get out of, like, I remember a lot of the Reiki people, actually.
Yep.
They went out and they got their certification, I guess, to be a minister so that they were doing something that was religious rather than health-related. They got out of it that way. So
that's right.
And the chiropractors, of course, were shunned.
Non-believers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the chiropractors, the guys that lose their licenses, would go and call themselves a structural therapist.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's so, like I said, that the only place I think that understands any of this is, of course, the great state of California, because they are the only one to have a Health Freedom Act that makes a distinction between the practice of medicine and the practice of healing, and you cannot regulate the practice of healing because, as they said, it's biological. We can't pass laws against biology, so anyone can practice any healing method. But like down in Florida, if you're running a like a yoga center and you're not a practicing Hindu, they slam you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you start saying you go do yoga for mental benefits or with concentration, it's just an exercise program. Same thing with martial arts. You know, so it's becoming like now, it's like all that cross-cultural stuff that's kind of drifted over from the East-West stuff and all that, all the down-under things and the woo stuff is starting to kind of bubble up and get exoed out and get kind of, picked off. Like in Colorado, forget it. You look at someone cross-eyed in Colorado without some managed care guy giving you the okay and they're slamming you, so... It's interesting how the coaches have been able to fly over this a lot because they're all on the internet. A lot of them basically, you can't regulate them because they're moving around out there. So we'll get into that a little bit with Drew in a couple of minutes if I have to just sit here and play it on the air. Any news from the live help?
Yep, she's given me something to try, so I'm trying it.
Okay.
We'll see if it works.
Really bizarre tonight.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's the
yes.
retrograde, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Mm-hmm.
Just bizarre. We've had glitches and itches, but tonight's been a cavalcade of challenges, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So we've covered A-Rod, we've covered clones, we've covered hissing planets, and we're pretty much at the point now where we can start talking about our product, the Somatic Companion.
Yay! Yes.
It's up. It's running. It's healthy. It's run by Cool T. It is glitchless. So you head over to summerspace.org, and you click on right below where it says, do you need an emotional makeover? It says click here, and you are taken away to the Shangri-La of sites, the downloadable version of the Somatic Companion, 7-plus hours of information, chock full of stuff, little 10 minutes a day, played over the course of a 30-day cycle, and you will then be blissed out by all the tools that are in there for you, and it will really deliver you to an area of awareness that is kind of like a little bit in the shadows right now, which deals with the fact that your emotions do not come from you. They come to you. From where? The moon.
Yep.
So it's moon over matter. So go check that out at summerspace.org. And it's a great gift coming up for the holidays, things like that. And we got the CD version up there, too. And lovely, talented Chuck Scott. Yes, I almost said something else. commanding everything over there at Cool T for us, so we're going to be able to have a lot more things going on over there soon, so check that out for us over there at somaspace.org. All right, so I'm going to just continue along here. And
it is nice.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. So I want to get, before we get into to Drew's interview, I wanted to get a little bit more about this whole idea of our relationship with success and give you a little idea of how the domains frame success, so that when you put your attention on success and you figure out where am I getting my information from, what domain is feeding me this belief, feeding me these ideas, and giving me the impetus to go towards something or away from something, as it were, when it comes to success. So going around the horn, of course, you got to begin with the old Philos, because that's where everything starts. Is that, and we touched on it a little bit in the interview here, is that success is sort of the antithesis of what they're dreading, which is to get away from failing, get away from things not working. So success is something that is outside, and it's something that needs to be achieved not so much for freedom, as we're going to hear about more with Drew's work, but for security. So success is part of survival. It's like, you know, and this is something that Val can attest to, is that the cultural pressure for women to keep the bloodline going is, you know, to have a success, to have a son, you know, all those things.
I've been hearing about it for years.
Yeah, and it's a program. It's basically, it's pushed down, you know, generation to generation, and success is something that is more linear, more on the longitudinal scale, more, you know, something that's keeping traditions up. And it literally means success, one thing after the other, succession. So that's the philo perspective of one thing after another in perfect order and having a sense of connection and a sense of continuity, where the onto perspective, as we're going to hear about in a minute, is much more about prioritization, much more about vertical success and having things that develop from a foundation on up and prioritize and be able to actually work in a more freed atmosphere where there's more control and influence. So that's the onto perspective, which is completely different than, it's actually 90 degrees from what we just said with Philos. And the eco, of course, takes one from column A, one from column B, like it always does, and kind of rides the diagonal and says, well, I want to be able to have the freedom to choose, but I also want to have the continuity to go back to things that worked in the past. So they sort of oscillate between strategies that worked before and inventing strategies that come out of thin air. So that's the eco sort of mosaic of success is just variation. So it's that biological variety kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the exos coming from the future, carrying the map of utopia, ignore all three of the other inputs and just impose what works. And they have this mentality of what's superior to whatever is present is should be the dominant strain. So that's kind of their mentality when it comes to success is to have a superior method, a superior technology, And so it comes across as a little impersonal. So their model of success is sort of independent of the people. It's more about, does the system make things more efficient? And it comes off a little cool sometimes. So that's the three basic models, and of course the EXO model, which is sort of sits there and says defies the other three. So
it'll be interesting to see what percentage of Drew's clients are Philo.
Yes, well, obedient Philo at that. So yeah.
Shall I check to see if this uploaded here?
Well, first check to see if we're on the air.
Well, I don't know if we're on the air. She doesn't know. They're working on it. What do you want me to do?
What, is it recording? Yeah, well, see if it's working.
Let's see.
Holy!
Right. Did you click on something while I'm trying to see if this thing works?
Yes.
Stop it!
I don't. I can help it.
Wait.
Go ahead. Go ahead, click.
I'm trying. That's a big no.
Not working. All right, I'll play it here.
All right.
Maybe it's somewhere. But first, let me play my thing here. Let's see.
Holy testicle Tuesday.
That is so good.
There you go. And
what was it that he said?
Yeah.
He says, holy testicle Tuesday.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah. The way I'm dealing with things. All right, so let's see. Just before we get into this, George's interview again. That didn't work, right?
No.
Okay. All right, so.
Throw me a frickin' bone here.
Please.
I'm the boss. Need the info.
All right. You gotta get this going. All right, so let's listen along with Drew and the gang here as we recorded an hour ago. Hopefully this will play without too much of a glitch.
All right, I'll give you some feedback, make sure that it's sounding clear and such.
All right. Crashed to the ground, and joining us is life coach Drew Rozelle and everybody here, Dr. Jeb and Professor Val. So welcome, Drew.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right, well, this is under a little bit of, adapt and overcome circumstances, but let's talk about that, because you're into success coaching and helping people find a path that maybe isn't something that's right in front of their nose, and there's so much out there that people get bombarded with. How do you define success in your world?
I think success is a pretty subjective term, but I'll tell you the way I define it personally is, success is a feeling, and it's not something external that you're ever going to find if you keep chasing it and saying, now I made it because I got $1 million in the bank, now I made it because I have this house that I always wanted, or that I got this book published. I think success is, a subjective feeling, but I measure it on a few dimensions. One would be freedom. Do I get to wake up and do what I want to do for the day? Do I have the financial resources to kind of be able to do the things that I want to do? Do I live my life with a sense of ease? That would be the second part of it, in that I've created the conditions in my life so that the things that I want come to me instead of me having to struggle, strive, or chase for them. And the third way that I define success is, in terms of a feeling, is how connected do I feel? And does that mean that, we all spend our time doing something in life, and, we can just have a job that we go to and kind of slave over and then go home and eat dinner and watch TV? Or do you have some sort of connection to what it is that you do, that it's almost what you spend your time doing is that which you cannot not do? In other words, that's where you get your energy. That's where your interest lies. That's where you do find a sense of purpose and connection with something outside of yourself.
Let me jump off from there, because thanks for the answer. I just wanted to get, because there's so many variations. Jeb and I deal with that a lot, in terms of health outcomes. What's a successful health outcome? What's a successful adjustment in chiropractic? And Val deals with it, in teaching her students with psychology of, what is mental health? Is it a destination or is it a journey?
So with your way you're taking it, how would you incorporate other people into personal success? You said connection to others and things like that is a feeling, is a part of the component. So if someone else in your circle suffers what you would call failure, which we haven't defined yet, how does it, the successful-oriented individual in your terms incorporate that? Is it something where it's an either or does any setback have some residual lesson for you to learn and move forward? How do you incorporate the ebb and flow of things? Because we're kind of wavy on this side of the phone, and we try to look at the whole thing. So I just want to get an idea how, since you're focusing on success and orienting people that way, how you deal with the inevitability where, you know, you're going to have persons,
right off the bat, I don't know how much I deal with success in the first place.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm wrong, because the stuff I saw on your website was more about success in terms of having a fulfilling life. So why don't you define a cool life as you do on your site, and maybe that points to success in what the things you
were
just defining. Maybe that's
where we
have to
start. I would go back to those three things, Mark, are those three dimensions. Freedom.
Okay.
You experience freedom in your life.
Freedom, yeah.
Some people will come and they'll say that they want to make a lot of money, right? Nobody is really that interested in money. It's not that interesting a thing. What they really want is a feeling that we believe money will give us. And that feeling is freedom. We believe money is what leads to that feeling of freedom. So,
okay,
to me, that's one of the cornerstones, that feeling of ease, again, that you're creating the conditions in your life where you're aligned with your intentions so that you're able to create that which you desire, that it actually is seeking you out and it actually is unfolding in your life rather than you having to go out and kind of force something to happen or try and make something happen. And the last part is that piece of connection that, again, you feel like what you're doing is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And just to give you an idea of how I work with people, I work with lots of people. I always say I could have made a career just specializing in attorneys, just specializing in lawyers. And these are people that, on a lot of dimensions of success, that of what the culture would call success, had successful lives. They had lots of money and lots of toys and things like that. But the truth was, they had no interest in being lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no interest in that. And it took them maybe 15, 20 years to figure that out. But what was missing is they had no connection to that. They became lawyers because when they were in high school, their mom or their dad said, you know what, you should be an attorney. And I'm picking on attorneys right now just because it could be all sorts of people, but the conditioning was, hey, this is what you should do because this is success. And they go, okay, I'll go do that. And they'll spend 4 years of college and 4 years of law school and working on the bar and then struggling to become a partner and doing all that kind of stuff. And then when they finally climbed the mountain, they said, I'm not even interested in being on this mountain.
Yeah, that happens
so
in a lot of fields, yeah.
Yeah, it happens
in
tons of
people. Yeah, Val's chiming in,
sorry. So how do you
experience
how
the
you,
academic when, disillusionment?
Well, I guess, so back to the Mark's question, and when you're working with people and creating the feeling of freedom and being in connection, when they have a struggle or when they hit a challenge, say somebody's not hearing your message, and this is what I find in when I'm working with my clients, they think they want to get what they think they want often, or what they're telling me they want isn't what they really want.
Right.
So they continue, they'll have setback after setback after setback, and it's not until we sort of go around and we identify what it is that they really want that then they gain one avenue or that one sort of detail of their care plan or of their life that they're struggling with. And what Mark was, as Mark was saying, what we talk about like you said, on our side of the phone is sort of learning to ride the wave that you're going to have these up times and these down times and you sort of, you can't have one without the other. How do you work with your clients in that context when they, so they're moving along and they're feeling it and they're connecting, but then they have a struggling time? How is it that you deal with them sort of walking them down the other side of the wave so they don't freak out and think, oh my God, now I'm I was doing so well, and as they come down the downside of the wave into the trough, which they inevitably have to do to create recovery and sort of, you know, pull back and have the squat before the next. Because I know that when people are predicting when they're first starting in any coaching program, they get jazzed about those successes, and then they think that it's just all success, or at least, you know, accomplishment. How do you work with them on that other
okay.
aspect?
So just a couple things. Is one, I used to coach people very much on the external, like focus on the external as to what's happening and what you're creating in terms of like a results-oriented coaching. And it is. That's an up and a down, right? And, well, life is an up and a down. But now my coaching is much more focused on the internal, about keeping people on an even keel. And so you don't – again, events happen in life, but my coaching is to kind of show people, it's really about self-awareness, that stuff's going to happen in life. You're going to have what we're going to say, oh, that's a great thing that happened. And then we're going to have what is, oh, that feels like an awful thing that happened in our lives. But what I try and do as a coach, in terms of creating all those feelings and what's really beneath it, is to give people the awareness that it's only your identification with those events, right? That's your ego at work that judges things good and bad. And with each one of those highs and lows, there's a feeling that comes up within you. There's an energy that comes up within you. And without getting into it completely here, my job is to show people where they tend to react to stuff, where they tend to, in terms of having an intention of what they want to create, if that's not showing up, or if they are kind of getting caught up in things, what's happening there is that they have a conflicting intention as well, and that's usually that conflicting intention is what is responsible, let's say, for that roller coaster feeling, and that's what I tend to focus my awareness on with a client, and to show them that whatever they're really perceiving as a problem in their life, and that's what they're identifying with, I want to eliminate that as being a problem. But that doesn't come necessarily from going out and taking what Tony Robbins or somebody would say is like massive action to go solve a problem. It's looking internally to your reaction to that problem. And that's really where my focus tends to be more.
All right, that gives me kind of a context. It helps me out because, you know, I've been looking over a couple of the last entries in your blog, and you've been, you know, working on things, and you're establishing something new called this Very Cool Life Network that just began, I guess, last week, right?
It was last weekend, correct.
Yeah. Tell us about that a little bit, because maybe people haven't heard about it yet.
Well, what that was about, Mark, is, you know, I've been coaching for 11 years now, and coaching has... the way the dynamic is set up is very often, you know, you'll have three sessions with a client a month, and you'll get in these kinds of conversations and do this kind of work. Well, I've been doing this work, like I said, really the kind of work I've been doing now, I've probably been doing that for 5 or 6 years. And like anybody who's been immersed in the field, I've done a lot of really interesting trainings, really cool stuff that to me is on the cutting edge of a lot of this stuff. I can't share everything that I know in 3 hours a month that are kind of separated. The model doesn't lend itself really well to that. And so what I wanted to do was create a community of like-minded people where we could get together, and in terms of, again, I call it the Very Cool Life Network, and I define the Very Cool Life as having those conditions, those feelings of freedom, ease, and connection. And I was able to attract enough people to begin this group. And the idea of the group is that we get together both in person and over the phone, and we get together for 3 days in the morning to really get into this work and lay the foundation, because that's what needs to be in place here. When I'm talking about things like the role of your ego and how you get in your own way, it can sound really kind of esoteric, but there's actually a very concrete model that I'm able to present in a workshop that gives people kind of a launching board and the context with which to do this work over an extended period of time. And like any work, you know, whether it's chiropractic or anything, or anything that's new that you're introducing, it can be the greatest stuff in the world, but if people don't actively practice it in their lives, they're not going to see any benefit. And I set up this group, that was the other part, that I set it up for a year. It's going to be a year. And we're all going to get together, and we're going to consciously practice things for a year, and we're going to see what changes. So that was kind of the rationale behind creating it, and we had a very cool weekend. It was really great.
All right, and everyone's interested in that, the website is Drew Rozell, no E at the end, ROZELL.com, and, you can hop on there and get going with that. A couple more questions about coaching, because, mid-90s or so was when I started seeing the word coaching pop up. There was the initial wave with Thomas Leonard's group and Coachville and a lot of those people. As a field or as a discipline, what's your take on coaching in general? There seems to be a mosaic or almost like a spectrum of flavors of coaching. There's executive coaching, all kind of laser coaching. It just seems like it's gotten to be very, it's almost like the Wild West. It's sort of an untamed, unchurched discipline in the sense that it has to make a lot of distinctions between therapy and other fields that are more established. And this is, it has a lot of distinctions, I guess, to make about itself to both the public and within the coaching community.
Yeah, like I'll just give you my history. I came in with Thomas Leonard.
Okay.
And he was kind of the founder of coaching, and the reason I think most people know about coaching today, I give him, at least in my perspective, all the credit. And I think he died, probably
late 90s,
right? Years ago.
2001 or so? Okay.
Yeah, it was 2001. And when he died, I think he was such a leader and such a creator that I don't know if the field has ever really recovered from that. No one really picked up the mantle from Thomas Leonard. So it is.
You're B.J. Palmer.
What's that?
I said it was coaching's B.J. Palmer. We had Dee Dee Palmer, and he didn't last too long, and then B.J. was around until, what was it, 60, 61 when he died and took a dirt nap, and the chiropractic has been a headless horse ever since.
Yeah, and I kind of think that's the way coaching is, and people have taken it up in their own ways and their own reins and their own directions, but there's not kind of that directive force that there was in the beginning. As for, the concerns with the distinctions between therapy, I mean, there was, when I first got into coaching, there was kind of this hysteria. Either it's died or I don't tune into that very much at all. My background is in psychology, and there's all these little quaint sayings about the difference between therapy and coaching, but, I don't know what the distinctions are anymore, and to be honest, I'm really not that concerned.
Well, I understand. I mean, just on the surface, what it appears like is that therapy and some of these interventions are more negative-based. It's like, you're broken, let me fix you. You have a problem, let me solve it. We're coaching, and we talk about positive physiology here. It's more about adding skills, becoming more solution-oriented, becoming more focused on what's possible rather than what's necessary, developing better resources, being able to network with other people. That when you don't have the awareness of something, someone else does. It's the difference between having, a librarian direct you to the book or having, someone else put you in a remedial reading class. You don't know how to read. You're illiterate, so you can't get a library card. And in terms of the way you share information, I just sense coaching sort of gives the view that the audience is intelligent but disoriented, where the other more allopathic, more traditional methods are sort of questioning that intelligence and maintaining the disorientation, as Val likes to say. One of her things in training was that, what does that statement about therapy, to keep them sick or something like that?
That was my my graduate professor. He said you always keep them a little bit sick so they keep coming back.
Tremendous marketing tool.
Unreal.
So, I said, coaching, that's why it appealed to me. I read a lot of Leonard's work and Dave Beck's work and some of the other coaches that came through, and I always related growing up, to sports. I had great coaches in sports, and the lessons were more visceral, I guess more somatic in a way. A hockey puck hits you in the throat, you pretty much don't have to question what the lesson was. And where some of the other stuff was more kind of, in your head and they try to mess around with the way you thought about things, where coaching seems to be more action-oriented and, like you said, felt sense awareness, and it's much more close to the ground for me anyway as far as the way things operate, where especially dealing with psychology, it seems to be more about the orientation of the practitioner, of the Jungian or Freudian or whatever they are. You have to kind of buy into their maps, sort of like the way the chiropractors did with the techniques in the mid-90s, where, you know, it was a technique war, and it was network versus this technique and that technique instead of, you know, what the client needed to learn. So that's my sort of, like, you know, glass-eye view of coaching at this point. So, all right, so just go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say briefly that, you know, watching therapy done and, you know, having done some therapy too, therapy is usually about the story of what happened,
mm-hmm.
and trying to understand the story. And coming from that view, you have to at least buy into the idea that understanding is going to change something. And I don't know that that's always the case, that just by understanding why you are the way you are, that's necessarily helpful. And so
again, some people want to do that to get some closure on things if they've suffered something. And I think everything has a place, you know, in someone's life when the need arises. I just think that the signal that's sent out by coaching is a little bit cloudy because of the fact that, like I said, it has a tendency to be idiosyncratic and a little bit more of a mosaic of messages rather than a clear voice. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the chiropractic deal, but, you know, I was sure, you know.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. All right, so wrapping up, I just wanted to kind of circle around one more thing here, just what you're doing and where you're going forward. I know you have a book in the works and some other things. So just to wrap up, what would you like to say to everybody here on the Blog Talk Naked Radio show?
You know, to promo myself in that way, I would say if they're interested in learning just about the way I look at things, probably the most fun place to go would be to my blog there, which is drewrosel.com. And what that is about is just kind of the way I see things in terms of my philosophy of creating what I call that a very cool life. And for the people who resonate with that idea of creating freedom, ease, and connection, you know, that's what I'm writing about in terms of that book as well. And kind of redefining cool from being something that's externally driven, like, geez, you look cool, or, you know, that's determined from the preferences of other people, and kind of recapturing that as an internal state as to how you feel about yourself and measuring them specifically on these dimensions. So,
okay, great. Yeah. All right, well, thanks for joining us on the show, and we'll be sure to have you on again soon to talk about something. We've got a whole coaching panel get you guys to talk about all these different deals one of these days, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Drew.
Right,
thanks, Drew.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
There it was.
This conference is no longer being recorded.
There you go. And speaking of no longer being recorded.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, I mean, come on. Yes, as we found out that the Blog Talk radio situation is offline right now. We are being recorded for archive purposes, which in our terms is really no big deal because the 11 of you that usually listen will now be joining the 100 or so of you that archive us checking out the show later on tonight or tomorrow or whatever. Good interview. I mean, basically a lot of information there. And, you know, Drew's got a unique take on the coaching profession. I haven't been involved with it for the last 11 years when it really was, you know, if you looked around for a life coach and you know, the mid-90s, it was few and far between. If you walk down the street now and swing a dead animal, you might hit two life coaches. So it's become, as you were talking about there during the interview, it's so unregulated and so cowboy that the parameters and the boundaries of what it can help or not help are still pretty up for discussion. And, you know, and as I was saying there, you know, this is something that it sort of self-defines. And, you know, that's why it lends itself to a lot of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just see if I can do this quick. Oh, wait, let's see. It might even be up there. No. All right, well, let me just do this while I...
And then depression set in.
That's right.
You know what I would like to hear?
What?
I would like to hear our Woo commercial.
Oh, yes, that's right. We were going to do that because, you know, we had an offer. I don't know if they managed to listen to this show. out there on the West Coast. They have persevered. The Minions get a gold star. But I'll give a plug. World Talk Radio, one of these pay outfits that every once in a while we get news and reviews from, and they sent us my little ding again. Don't be sighing about my ding. Anyway, is it there? Oh, come on. Oh, I gotta do this. Okay. So anyway, long story short, they offered us, you know, these 13-week trial, you know, to buy the show. And I'm like, yeah, okay, how much? $5,200. You know, so I had a conniption inside going, I don't think so. We're so happy here at Blog Talk. We're
what? What?
Exactly. So, you know, I was a little remiss there. But anyway, as you were saying.
Yes. Shall we play the commercial?
Yes. What we did is we did some radio last year, around this time, in September or so. And anyway, here's the commercial from last year. Since we discussed A-Rod before, this might be relevant. Go ahead.
Hey, Val, you want to watch baseball this summer?
Yep, but I'm going to join a new team this fall.
What's the team's name?
Woo.
The team.
Woo.
The name of the team.
Relax, just go to woopalooza.com. It's all there.
Woopalooza.com?
Yeah, WOOPALOOZA.com.
Is there a number I can call? I'm in my car.
Forget about it. Just remember, woopalooza.com.
Okay, one more time. WOOPALOOZA.com.
Get your tickets now.
And Yankee fans, unlike A-Rod, you can't boo the Woo.
Not even for fun?
Nope, these MVPs deliver in the fall.
It holds up over time. I gotta admit, that is a classic commercial, and the backstory on that is another book. Getting over to the peak over there, 107, mm-hmm. The bunker. Another
that
bunker of
fun.
Broadcasting that we found.
That was fun doing that, though.
Yeah, it was interesting at times, the Woo. And you know, last weekend, of course, Jules had her expo up there in Connecticut, and was well attended, and the vendors were happy, and so she had a good time with that. So anyone who listened to Jules' show a couple weeks ago, thanks for cooperating and supporting that and getting the Woo out there. We need it all we can. And, you know, it's just I had a little bit of a little bone to pick coming out of that interview just because he kind of got away from the whole idea of success, and then he really was talking about it without saying it. So I just, you know, just... I just was, you know, I was like, it was like he was protesting too much.
Oh, man.
And it just became one of these deals where I just, I had to kind of get to that because I get the feeling that people go to coaching thinking that that is a shortcut to the situation there. And well, I won't do it again.
Jebster returns. Hello, Jeb.
So okay, now that Jeb's back, we can kind of bounce this off of him, because as we were just saying, Jeb. And we were wondering, you know, since you know, Drew's coaching is more about focusing on internal and feeling and things like that. You know, you asked him, we asked him, we kind of went around the horn. You know, how do you deal with setbacks? How do you deal with other people's setbacks as you're trying to progress yourself? And it didn't seem to be, because we were dealing with, if you guys didn't pick it up, an Onto guest tonight that was basically dealing with things in a very singular way, and every time we tried to eco him out there, he came right back to that. So I just, in case we didn't mention it at the top of the show, Drew Rozell is not Jeb's brother-in-law, so just give us an idea about, you know, his take on that aspect of it, because I don't think we got to draw that out, separate cool life from success, from his return to more internal-oriented coaching. Just if you can give us a minute on that. Jeb, is he there?
Let me click on him again. Wait, let's see. Okay.
Nope.
Jeb? Oy vey.
This is one of those days. It really is. Man, I'm losing my mind here. Is he there or not?
Yeah, he's. I see him here. And
I see him there, too.
I click. Hold on. I'm clicking off again. I'm clicking back on. You might have to call back in, Jeb.
You might have to. 9:49. We got 10 minutes to go.
All right. He hung up, so he does hear us.
Okay. Take this approach.
There you go.
So, you know, I mean, that we tend to talk about both sides of the wave, being able to manage yourself at the peak and the valley, and coaching seems to promote the peak, and therapy seems to promote the valley. So, are we there with Jeb? Hello.
I'm here.
Hello there, yes.
What I was going to say is I don't, I was waiting for the answer from Drew, and it was interesting because I know Drew really well, and you know, I think that
You're
his
right.
message, his, I
right.
think his message was he was being consistent with the message of his program, and I do think that's how he thinks, but I think practically that there was, I don't know if he was not understanding our question, because I think that it does tie in to what he was talking about. But what
mm-hmm.
I did hear from him, he was saying that external failure is you know, it's like you ignore it. It's not good. It doesn't happen. But I didn't really hear him saying about just state chasing either, like, because he kind of
right.
he alluded to that with Tony Robbins, just saying you can't just push harder, and drive the system harder. He acknowledged that. But I you know, it was a pretty clear onto message in the sense of
mm-hmm.
of keep going back to your internal reference point and keep it all easy and steady. But it was interesting because I think knowing Drew, I know that he's read Irv's work and he's totally down with it and he understands the super wave and
mm-hmm.
But I think that the way his work is set up, it takes that into account. Because he's allowing those things to happen, but he's just ignoring them, though. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. It just seemed like he discussed for 5 minutes the problems in the coaching community, but then he just dismissed it and said, well, I don't focus on that. It was very kind of like, I'm in the coaching community and it's all screwed up, but I don't focus on that. So it was,
right.
That's why we were saying before, like, it'd be interesting to see if he profiled his clients, how many of them were Philo.
Right.
And just adopted his belief system and didn't question it and took it as, okay, we'll just do what the program says. And it just seems like that's the theme in coaching, is that whoever you get has to be sort of a charismatic figure, sort of like a technique developer, that, the drunk to God religion, everyone gets the religion. And if they can, and this is why, I don't know if you guys watched it last night, but they had a thing on CNN with good old Deepak up there. And Dr. Oz is becoming a talking head in his
uh-huh.
Modern day career here on CNN with that Cooper guy, whatever his name is. And they were talking about spiritual healing and the role of practical part of healing as opposed to the more woo part of it. And of course, Deepak took the woo side and Oz took the biological side, and they were going back and forth. And they were saying the problem with The Secret is that they try to replace action with hope. And they don't. It's like the metaphor is that the whole. If you ever heard of it, is that the guy's a very evolved spiritual guy is in a town that's flooding, and he won't leave the town because he's just going to pray and God's going to make the flood go away. And the guy, and they send the people in to get him evacuated. He doesn't want to go, and they send a boat in. He doesn't want to get in the boat. They send the helicopter in. He doesn't want to get. So then he dies, and he goes to whatever, and he meets his creator, and he says, you let me down. He goes, well, I sent you the car. I sent you the boat. I sent you the helicopter. What do I got to do? So it's like sometimes we don't realize that some of the people that are entering our lives, some of the events that are happening, is the spiritual prize. And to say, wow, this is the person that came into my life to help me, not waiting for God to do it or some other disembodied entity. Like some of the people in The Secret, they just think they can just picture it in their head and do nothing, and it's just magic is going to happen, and it's delusional, and it feeds into this belief that basically that whole you create your own reality, which gets me nuts.
Uh-huh.
So, that's why it's...
Wile E. Coyote, super genius.
Mm-hmm. It just feeds into, I'll get into the somascopes here with that because we got a couple minutes left, is that as we're looking at Philo Week and your relationships, it isn't just relationships with people in the connection, the physical connection with them or the way that the social relationships are. It's also the connection to the ideas those people bring you and how that resonates with you and how you carry out, how you use those ideas. Because it's one thing to just come in contact with information. It's another thing to internalize it, make it your own, and then use it and pass it on to somebody else, which is really the Philo worldview, is to be able to pass it on to somebody else. It's a legacy thing the Antos take the credit of planting the flag in the ground, but the Philos like the continuity of it being able to say, you know, just think about this time of the year with the, all the recipes and stuff going around and things like that. Everyone's scurrying around using their sort of template that they go through the holidays with, and that's been passed down from generation to generation. So it's an idea that you've been able to adopt as your own and apply to your own local circumstances and then have it spread from there. So if you're in this domain, if you are a Philo, this time of the year is, I mean, come on, you can't get any better. You got the Halloween candy just still drying up, and you got your turkey getting ready, and then the Christmas shopping, the whole thing. I really think the Philos love this time of the year, and they also hate it because they want it to be perfect, and they also look forward to it because they get to see all the relatives and everything like that, and they actually enjoy the vibe where the other three domains kind of go through it on the inside and go, you know, do I have to? Do I have to be part of the act? Okay, fine. And the Antos sort of take it, especially it would be interesting if we would ask Drew this, is that the holidays are a chance to sort of affirm and renew their beliefs so that they can actually examine things that they want to take forward with them and discard the things that no longer serve them. So they're sort of taking an internal housekeeping kind of thing, and where an eco is much more about looking at the emotional side of things and seeing if they can wear that again next year. It's almost like the clothes they don't want to, you know, they'll give away to the Salvation Army. It's like their emotional wardrobe is turning over, where an exo is looking at things like, how can I use this time of the year, you know, systemically so that I don't go through, you know, the same blocks I went through last year. So they're more troubleshooting. So that's just different perspectives on the holiday season as you go through Philo Week, and it ends on Saturday, so I'll take a look at that. All right, so we're going to pitch it over to Dr. Jeb for his tip of the week here. We come up on 10 o'clock.
Well, let's get his wave here.
Oh, right. Yeah, give him his intro.
Okay, hold on. Here it is.
Wow! I feel good!
Ooh, came out of nowhere. All right.
Okay.
Okay, good.
So this week, just take a little stockpile of, or stockpile, take a look, a little inventory of all the things that you're tolerating, and you know, maybe make a list, like the top 10 things that you're tolerating this week, and in your life, not just this week, but the top 10 things that you're tolerating in your life, and see what you can do about shifting the way that you're either reacting to those things, so that you're not tolerating them, or ignore them, like Drew does, so they're, you know, just so they don't exist, or intend to change them or change them. So it's, you know, just looking at those things that sort of, you know, you look at it every day and you go, I hate that, the color of that lamp, you know, and you keep walking by. It's, well, throw it away. Put it on the curb for free. You know, somebody needs it. So it could be any number of things, but that's my tip of the week.
Okay. And, again, write it down, throw it away. If you can't share it with the person that's giving you the angst, just get it, crystallize it somewhere so that you can witness it and process it something as independent of the feelings you're getting. So. All right, we got about a minute left, so let's turn it over to Professor Val with our quote of the week.
Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
Okay. I cannot give you the formula for success, but I can give you the formula for failure, which is try to please everybody. I'll screw you up.
Wow.
Yep.
Give that to A-Rod.
Yes.
That's right.
All right, so as we depart, we'll give a little file on music here. I love this song. Thanks for joining us here on the archive special of Naked Soma. If you spelunked and found us, we'll be back again next week with a superb guest that we're working on the night before Thanksgiving. So for everybody here, travel light. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Adios.